Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today I will be interviewing Don Shireen. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available each week on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So, how has it been living in the mountains during this time of year? Because I know it's winter time. How has that been going so far with you?
Well, it's been cold, and I live in Arizona. I live in the White Mountains of Arizona, and yes, people, Arizona does get snow. So last night I woke up and I heard something hitting the roof, and I looked out and it was sleeting and hailing. And then this morning I woke up to about, I don't know, a good 2 inches of snow on the ground, enough to make the dog not want to go out and all the cats want to come in. So, but the mountain is interesting. And with the COVID situation this year, I live 3 miles from the largest Apache reservation in the United States. And COVID has hit the reservation really badly, due to the fact that they don't really have potable water and their living situations, how they, you know, families upon generations all live together. So it has, the mountain has definitely been affected by COVID this year. And, they're still on lockdown. They've been on lockdown since Thanksgiving, and the reservation is still on lockdown. They're not supposed to leave at all. So they've been on almost a 2 month lockdown on the reservation to try to, keep it at bay a little bit. But yeah, it's been an interesting year on the mountain for sure.
Wow. Does it get really cold?
It does get really cold. It goes below zero out here, and people find that hard to believe, but I'm at like a 7,800 foot elevation. So when you think about that, it's like, you can see how it gets cold. I haven't had my pipes freeze this year. Thank God. My friend last year actually did my pipes up for me really good this year, because that's always a constant problem out here, is your pipes freezing because they're not set for like winter, you know, like back east where you have the pipes and stuff like that, they're all insulated. But out here, because it's Arizona, they don't really put in the fact that it can be below zero on occasion, so everybody's pipes freeze. But so far so good this year for me. I've been very, very blessed with having water through the whole season so far, but February is usually the coldest month, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully this year I'll make it through without busting a pipe.
Wow, I hope so too. That busting a pipe definitely. Sounds horrible.
It's horrible. And like last year, it's funny because last year I came out of the hospital and my pipes were burst, and nobody like realized that's why there was no water pressure in the park. So I don't know for how long my pipes had been burst before I came out of the hospital to realize, like, guys, we got a massive problem here, and this is why you guys don't have any water pressure whatsoever, because it is flowing under my house. So it was crazy. I had a nice ice skating rink last year for a couple months, you know.
Wow. I know this pandemic has been trying for everyone this entire year, especially since, I would say, March time?
March.
Yeah, so it's been going on for a while. And I know people respond to it differently, because being on lockdown for periods of time, and even if it's not a mandated per se lockdown, just having to not have interactions with family and friends as often as you would like to. I know that you began going to school not long, this year because of a tragedy. How has that experience been?
Well, what happened? So the tragedy is my best friend committed suicide in September, and it had a lot to do with COVID, and it had a lot to do with he had an addiction problem, and there was just a lot that fell into it. He had tried to get in contact with his dad that he had been estranged with for years, decades, and his father blew him off, and things just started tumbling for him badly. But COVID definitely fueled the fire for him, feeling as if there was a hopelessness in his heart, that he couldn't work, in being isolated. Now for me, the isolation part of this is not such a big deal, because with the bipolar and everything, I generally tend to isolate from people anyway. So for me, it wasn't such a huge deal not to be around people all the time. But for him, being such a social butterfly that he was, the whole lockdown situation just kind of cramped his style to a point that he, I mean, I really don't know. I hadn't talked to him in like a couple weeks before he died. We had a huge fight and there was a trust issue and his addiction was a problem. But I mean, I still loved him, and his suicide was definitely an unexpected tragedy. Out of all the people in the world I know, he was the last person I ever would have thought would have committed suicide, but he did. And so about 2 weeks after he committed suicide, I started taking classes online, of course, because all the colleges out here are, everybody's quarantined, so you can't go to actual school. And I started taking a theology class out of Georgetown called Theohumanism, God's Place in Our World, trying to understand how God could make somebody suffer so much that they would want to die, that they had, that their will was gone. And I actually understand both sides of it, having, committed suicide and lived. So I understand both sides of it, but it doesn't make it any easier for me to accept the fact that my best friend is no longer going to be bounding through my door, and there's no more texts and no more phone calls and there's no more new artwork from him. And it's been hard. So this Theohumanism class, I started it in hopes of understanding why God makes us suffer. And now that I'm like almost near the end of it, what Theohumanism says about it is that God doesn't make us suffer, that we suffer because we don't have God. And that God suffers along with us, that any tragedies that we go through, God is with us in that. He is suffering along with us as if he was our friend, somebody come over and have a cup of coffee with us, and here comes God, have coffee with us and suffer with us in our losses. So it kind of put a new spin on it, and I can accept that understanding, because to think of God as a wrath, full of wrath and rage and not loving his children was really kind of disturbing to me. But this theohuman approach to it makes a lot of sense to me, that because we lack God, we suffer. And as soon as we ask God to come into our lives and join us, we don't suffer as much because we have his grace and a better understanding of what's happening. So, I mean, it makes sense to me. For some people, it might be a little bit, a pretty large idea to wrap your head around, to, be like, God suffers with us, he doesn't make it happen. But it makes sense that we suffer because we don't have God. So, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but to me, it makes sense. Having, finally getting into the fifth module, it makes sense to me. In the beginning, when I started taking the class, I would have been like, oh no, that's crazy talk. But it actually makes sense now. And, because the class has gone through phases of like understanding, friendship as religion, which is another really kind of huge concept. But when you think about it and you think about your friends and how much time you devote to your friends, and if you covet your friends and if you respect them, in a way, it kind of does become a form of religion. That you love your friends and you hold them to the highest esteem, and you would never want anything to dirty your friendship. So in a way, it kind of, I can understand that as a religion too. Not that I worship my friends, but sometimes we do, And when Christopher first died, there was a weirdness in my head about not idolizing him, but I did kind of put him on a pedestal for a while. Because it was just so tragic, and I wanted to honor him, and I wanted people to remember him as he was and not as somebody who committed suicide, because the stigma around suicide is still so huge that, I've been doing everything in my power to honor him. I'm trying to start a nonprofit out here for suicide awareness and prevention. I've gone to like all the suicide.org stuff that they have and placed his name on the like the wall of honor, and stuff like that, because he wasn't a weak person. And I'm not sure if it was the addiction that caught up with him, because he was addicted to opioids, which is horrible in itself. or you know, it was just everything. He was losing friends because of his addiction, and he had lost trust. People had lost trust in him because of it, and he was changing and not in a good way. And the COVID made it so that he couldn't even go back to Phoenix, where he's originally from, to like find his home base and, you know, maybe get well there. So yeah, it's just been a really interesting, tough year, you know. And I lost my dog Doc in July, and then Christopher died in September, and it was like, oh my gosh, like my two basis of my foundation of my life are gone. And what am I gonna do now to like rebuild on this? And it's been an interesting couple months, but you know, I feel like I'm doing okay. I went into grief therapy, which I highly suggest for anybody. If you've lost anybody in your life at any point in time and are still having issues with, you know, accepting it, grief therapy has been amazing. The first 3 weeks were horrible. I did nothing but cry straight through them. You know, I mean, like I'd go in there and I would just cry straight through the whole hour. And then I went inpatient for a week because I was having some serious cognitive issues, and hallucinations, and a lot of it due to lack of sleep after Christopher's death. I just couldn't sleep. So I went in and I got stabilized and came out with a whole new mindset and a whole new understanding of why things have to happen, you know. And Christopher's death, you know, his mission was completed, and his death was the catalyst for me to start to break the stigma a little bit more for people, and to help people to understand that, you know, suicide is an option. It's a terrible option. I'm not suggesting anybody take it. It's a terrible option, but it is an option, and it doesn't mean that you're weak. It just means that you were done, that you just couldn't see a way out of it, and the pain was just so huge that you just needed to end the pain. You know, I really wish he would have made it. You know, I wish he would have made it, but he didn't. So there's something to be done with that, to keep his name honored, and that's like one of my main missions now, is to make sure that he is not forgotten, and that he is not like thrown under the bus as just another weak person who just couldn't handle their life, because that's not what it was all about. There was, you know, a bigger underlying issue there. So,
Yeah, so that's what I.
that's where I'm at. You know?
Yeah, I was going to ask you to expound a little bit more on that, what you just talked about. Him, you know, people tend to think suicide is a person, you know, a weakness or a person being weak. To kind of expound a little more on that.
Yeah, it's not a sign of, I don't think it's a sign of weakness. I mean, I just think sometimes what happens with suicide is that people have tried so hard and they just feel like they're optionless, that, you know, they've talked to the people that they can, that they feel like they can be open enough to talk to about it, and that they've, you know, they've gone to therapy, and that they've, you know, I think the thing with his dad was really kind of like the deciding factor on it, though. When his father blew off that phone call that day, and he had put so much expectation and hope that that would be the thing that would, you know, that he would have a dad, you know, because he hadn't had a dad since he was 8. And, you know, Christopher was 34 when he died, so he had been without a father for a long time. So he had built a lot of hopes and desires and expectations around this relationship, you know, finally working out. And when that didn't happen, it was like his heart was just literally crushed, like somebody had taken a bulldozer and just run him over. And I mean, I honestly think that was part of it. I mean, the addiction certainly didn't help, and you know, people had given him a lot of ultimatums around that. And you know, I didn't give him an ultimatum. I offered to help him find a bed so that he could get clean, you know. And I think he wanted to, but then after the thing with his dad, I think he just felt like there was just no reason to even try anymore, that he was going to be like his father, that he was going to be a low life, and that he was never going to amount to anything. And he had convinced himself that he was just like this man that he didn't know. And you know, it was hard to not get him to be that way, you know. And he wasn't working, and he felt crappy about that because he wasn't, you know, he wasn't earning a living, and he was living on unemployment, which was fine because like everybody in the world was living on unemployment because there was nobody could go to work. But he had this pride around himself that he was like, he was, you know, like he was taking from the government, like he was taking and taking, but not deserving of it, which was not true either. So, but yeah, I mean, and I'm not just saying, and Christopher by far is not the only person to have committed suicide during this COVID epidemic, pandemic. I mean, I can literally think of like 10 people right off the top of my head that I may have not known personally, but knew them through friends of friends that have committed suicide during the pandemic. And a lot of it has to do with the social distancing. People who would normally just be out and about at their job, at the gym, you know, going to school, doing their thing. And then when all of a sudden it just came down and you're like on, like you're just shut down from your whole life that you knew. I mean, that threw a lot of people off kilter. Even people that didn't have any form of like mental health issue prior to that, the minute that that lockdown came, people started experiencing things that they never experienced before because we were all in a brand new world that we have, you know, there was no rule book to how to live through a pandemic. We did not have the COVID workbook, you know, to guide us as to what we're supposed to do. And a lot of people just didn't know how to ask for help because they've never been in a situation like that before that they needed that help. You know, they didn't know that it was available to them. And you know, now that we have like the vaccines and stuff, maybe this year will be better. Maybe 2021 will not be another, you know, pandemic year. But I mean, what I would really like for people to realize is that asking for help does not make you weak. I think it actually makes you one of the strongest people on earth to realize that you're falling and you need someone to catch your fall for you. Ask for help, man. It makes you strong. You know, the fact that you realize that you need help and that you're willing to accept somebody's help, I think makes you a superhero.
Gotcha. So, are there any signs that loved ones do you think could look for when someone may be considering suicide or may be at a low point that you've noticed?
Yeah. Isolation is definitely a huge one. If you start noticing that, you know, somebody that you might talk to or text, like say every other day or something like that, and you've gone 3, 4 days without hearing from them, that's a pretty good indication that they're not okay. You know, if you're living with somebody and you notice that their sleep habits are disturbed, that they're either eating too much or not eating at all, that they've lost interest in even the simplest of things, you know, like, oh, I don't know, just like, you know, like walking my dog. You know, if they came to a point of time where I stopped walking my dog, that would be a huge indication that I'm not doing okay. But yeah, the simplest, easy ones to pick up on people are definitely sleep disturbances, either sleeping too much or too little, or the appetite, lack of appetite or too much appetite. But like, say, I mean, like I stopped doing the podcast for about a month. For me, that was a huge indication that I wasn't okay, you know, and I picked up on it, but because other people weren't so aware of what was going on with me, they didn't pick up on it. But because I'm aware of what is going on with me, I was like, oh crap, this is something you love. This is like part of your life, and you haven't done this in a month. What's going on? You know, like simple things, somebody's house. If somebody's always like very, very neat and you come into their house and it's just cluttered and their dishes aren't done and their laundry is everywhere, it's a pretty good indication that your friend might want to sit down and have a nice heart-to-heart talk with you about what's going on because those are simple, simple things, you know? I mean, because we legitimately, like, you can't like go to like the mall like you used to be able to go to. You cannot go to your coffee shop like you used to be able to go to. You know, meeting your friend at the bar for pool after work, that's like not happening because first of all, people aren't working and the bars are shut down. So, you know, these normal lifestyle things that people had that they could, you know, that they could guarantee are gone. So, you know, and if people are just like shutting you out, like legitimately, if you're trying to get a hold of your friends and they're not answering their phone and they're not texting you back, it might be time to go, you know, knock on the door, bring a pizza, bring something, knock on the door and say, hey, I noticed that you haven't been available. Are you okay? And a pizza will pretty much always get you through the front door. So, you know, it's a good way to break that ice, you know, with somebody that you care about that could be contemplating suicide or just be in a really, really dark headspace of depression.
So through your experience, I know this was a really tragic experience for you, losing your friend in that way. Did you always, have a relationship or know about God prior to?
I've always had, yeah, see, I was brought up, it's kind of, I was brought up in, I'm a Congregationalist, so it's a, a Christian. And I was brought up in the church because of my grandma. And then after my dad died when I was 15, I had some issues with God. I'm not gonna lie about it. And I was very, very angry with him for taking my father. And I worked through that, and I came back into the church when I moved to Arizona, so I was like 40-ish when I finally like decided to have God come back into my life, full time. But my understanding of God hasn't always been that he's the best dude, and I think that's part of why after Christopher's suicide that I took the theology classes, because I didn't want to be angry with God anymore. And I, in my own head, didn't really think that God was that vengeful that he would just kill people randomly for no reason whatsoever and just to make us suffer. So my under I my belief in God is probably different than a lot of people's, but I do have a relationship with him, and I do know that he leads us to where we're supposed to go. He puts people in our lives in order for us to learn from them, and to teach us things. I'm still not really pleased that Christopher's deceased. I mean, I'm, there'll never be a day that goes by in my life if I live to be 192 years old that I'm not going to think about Christopher and be like, man, that really sucked. That was just, 34 is so young. I wish he could have just made it. But I mean, the other side of the coin is with his addiction issues and how far he was going, would we have even been friends now had he not? I mean, there's so many what ifs that come into this, like, and I don't have the answers to them. And maybe this was just the way that it was supposed to end, with everybody still remembering him and loving him and having the good memories of him, and not of him being a total addict, that just lost his life in that way. So I don't know, Maurice. It's really hard to it's really hard to understand why bad things have to happen. But I do know that eventually I'm gonna look back on this and I'm gonna go, that's why. Now I understand why you had why this had to follow this and that had to follow that. But right now, I mean, it's helping me to try to get people to better understand suicide and suicidality and suicidal ideation and depression and how to be aware of it in your own life and with those that you love. And I just want to say, like, don't be scared to reach out to people. I mean, a lot of us have these things in our head that if somebody doesn't want to be bothered, that maybe it's because they don't like us, or maybe it's because of something that we did to them. But I can almost guarantee you that 99% of the time, it has absolutely nothing to do with you. It's all with them, and they're praying in their own mind, or wishing that somebody would connect with them. So be brave and be the one that connects with the people that you're losing touch with. When after this interview, when you hear it, go call that person that you haven't spoken to in a week and just go check up on them, and it'll make you feel better too. The connection. That's the thing with COVID is that we've lost so much connection. No more hugs and no more face-to-face meetings, and we've lost so much connection that it's time to get that back, and don't be scared to reach out to people. They're going to be very, very grateful that you did.
Yeah, it sounds like you are in a good space right now, and it's good that you had grief therapy. Was that
Yeah.
really helpful for you?
Grief therapy, it legitimately saved my life, because after Christopher died, I didn't want to, I didn't, I can't say I didn't want to live, but I just didn't want to be anymore. Like, I just was done. I stopped. It's like the car ran out of gas, I had flat tires, and it just stopped. And that was me. Like, I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping, my house was a wreck, my dog wasn't getting walked, the pets weren't getting fed. I wasn't getting my mail. I wasn't doing anything. I just legitimately just stopped. I wasn't taking my medication. And it wasn't like I wanted to die, but I just didn't want to be anymore. I wanted to go into a void, you know, like where nobody could touch me and nothing more could hurt me. And that's kind of what I did. And I had a good friend who did come to my door, knocked on my door, saw my house, looked at everything that was going on and was like, "Do you think it's time we called crisis?" And I'm like, "Yep, I think it's time we called crisis." And they helped me get in patient that day. So again, it was like, if my friend hadn't stepped up to the plate and come and checked on me, who knows what would have happened, you know? I mean, because I was not thinking rationally. I was seeing Christopher everywhere. I was delusional, which was lack of sleep, and also because I was messing with my medication. And from what I understand, a lot of people, after somebody they love dies, they do get that peripheral vision of seeing them everywhere because you want them to be there so badly that you're making it so that they are there. But he wasn't here. You know, he definitely wasn't stopping by and visiting me on a regular basis. So I am grateful for my friend for stepping up to the plate. And she took care of my pets for me when I went in for that week and got stabilized and cleaned my house for me and, you know, did all kinds of stuff that a good friend does for you when you're not feeling well. And I think if we could all just be that good friend to somebody, that it could flip this world in a really good way.
Wow, that really does sound like a good friend. Yeah.
And the funny thing is, Maurice, is that we were bitter enemies up until the point, well, I had known her prior, and then because of Christopher and, you know, my dating him and her wanting to date him, we became like mortal enemies for a period of time there. And then after Christopher died, it was like we came back together as friends. So it was kind of like a really weird like thing that happened there, because, you know, had Christopher stayed alive, we would probably still be mortal enemies because of that stupid girl jealousy thing and all that stuff. But it was almost like in his death, we bonded, you know, and it's just kind of a weird thing. It's like, I can see him when we first got back together as friends, I saw him looking down on us going, "Yep, yep, that's my girls," you know, and just laughing at us because we were just so ridiculous in how we were just like so, you know, petty against each other. I mean, I look back at it now and I laugh at how stupid we were and how petty it was. But, you know, we're tight. We're good friends. We're bonding together. We're trying to set up this nonprofit together. I'm trying to get her to join the grief group, but I bring her all the handouts, you know, because she's just not quite at the point where I am now, as far as like, you know, publicly talking about his suicide and his death. So, and I respect that, you know, I respect her for that. You know, she talks to me, so we've got each other and I'm not worried about her doing anything stupid. But it was just a weird dichotomy that, you know, while Christopher was alive, man, we were mortal enemies. And when he died, man, it was like his death brought us back together again as tighter friends than we ever were before. So.
Wow. So, how have you been able to, I guess, maintain since the time you've gone into inpatient and did grief counseling? How have you been able to maintain yourself and keep a positive outlook, even though we're still in the pandemic?
Yeah. Well, it's all about mindset, you know, like, the other day the day after Christmas, like that whole Christmas fallout, you know, everything is done. And I started to kind of like go down that road of being all mopey and sad. And it's all about your mindset. Your mind is very powerful and you can flip your attitude. So, you know, because I want to honor Christopher's death, my falling into a dark space isn't going to help that at all. And I keep that very much in the forefront of my mind that I'm representing him in a way right now. Also my dog Doc, you know, and so I need to maintain this outlook that everything, you know, positivity, you create that in your own life. Nobody's going to come in and make you happy. You might think that they are, but they're not. They can do things that can help you to get to be happy, but nobody can make you happy. It's all in your own, it's all about you. You have to feed that to yourself. So I started going down this road after Christmas of, I just started going down a dark road, and I was like, wait a minute, what are you doing? And I flipped it, and I was like, wouldn't you rather be happy? The sun is shining, you have a roof over your head, you're so much better off than you were 2 years ago. You're not homeless, you have people that love you, you're doing things that help people. And how is this going to help you to get all depressed and, and unhappy about stuff when it all, legitimately, I've got it pretty good. I mean, I'm not a gazillionaire, and I wouldn't want to be a gazillionaire, but I mean, I really have it pretty good. And I started thinking about my listeners that, live in like these third world countries and stuff that, that listen to my show. And I'm thinking, my God, like you have running water in your house, and you have heat, and you have plenty of clothes and more food than you could eat in a year. And what do you have to be upset about? I mean, I have school paid for. I have a new dog who loves me, and I have good friends. And, I mean, when you start to think about it that way, and all the things that I have to be grateful for, which are way more than the things that I have to be upset about, it kind of makes it ridiculous to get upset, And it's like, anything that I want, pretty much, I can achieve, And if I can't achieve the top 100%, I can still get to 80% of what it is that I want, I mean, I'm never gonna have a Learjet, and I'm okay with that. I don't really want one anyway, you know what I mean? But it's like, everything that people, anything that you want, if you want it bad enough, you can achieve it. You just have to, set up the guidelines to get to it, and just keep on progressing, even if you're standing still, as long as you're not going backwards, you're still progressing. And we all have our own times, and out of grief therapy, the two words that I've learned are eventually and gradually. And it's so true, because eventually you will get to where you want to go, and healing is a gradual process. It's not going to be overnight, but gradually you will get to a new normal, and you're going to be okay. And I mean, as much as I've lost this year, I have my life, I have my health, I have a house, I have so much more than I ever could have dreamt of, like say 3 years ago, that to be ungrateful would just be like, slapping God in the face and being like, yeah, that's not enough, because you know what? I'm good. I'm full. I'm good.
So for you, someone who has been diagnosed with bipolar and living with that and living through it, how are you able to not use that as an excuse and choose to say, myself within you have to make yourself happy?
Yeah, see, I using the bipolar as a crutch, man, is that's one of my biggest pet peeves ever. And that's another one of the things I'm trying to change, is for people that do have bipolar or other mental health diagnoses. Okay, you have it, but it doesn't give you reasons to be a jerk, to treat people badly, to use it as an excuse for every bad thing that you do. I hate that. It's one of the hugest pet peeves. The way I look at it is, if be honest about your diagnosis. If you're having a rough day, be honest with the people around you. Tell them exactly why you're having a rough day, what it is that triggered you. Do not use your diagnosis as a crutch or as a, that whole victim mentality. Oh my God, that like just it that infuriates me when I see people using that, because it's like the bipolar. Okay, all right. So yes, it's a chemical imbalance, and it does sometimes make you do things that you might regret. Own it. After the fact, if you need to apologize, apologize, but own the fact that you acted on it, that you know, the bipolar isn't like a person that's going to come up to you and tap you on the shoulder and be like, here, be a jerk today, you know? And I have this argument with people all the time because they're like, I can't control it. Okay. At times I get that, you know, and that's like when you go and get new medication and get stabilized and have somebody direct care around you that can help to monitor you so that you don't like do something stupid. But, you know, once you're stabilized and you've been on your meds for a while and you're in therapy and you're doing well, to throw back your bipolar and use it as a crutch or as a victim mentality thing, I just hate it. I think it's bullshit. I mean, I really do. It's like saying somebody with diet, you know, somebody with, oh, I don't know, cancer maybe, and, you know, and them coming in and just being a total idiot at dinner and saying, oh, it's the cancer's fault. It's not, you know, you have control over your own mind. And yeah, I have a lot of issues with that actually. But I mean, I know some people are sicker than I am, and I know some people haven't quite gotten to the point where I have gotten with my diagnosis and with my health and the understanding of like, you know, how I eat and exercise and who I hang around with and what I let come into my life as far as like say social media, TV, stuff like that will all directly affect how you feel. So, you know, if you're mindful of that and of what you're taking in, you know, I think you can definitely help to flip your own mind and not use that victim mentality. Because you know what? When you're using that victim mentality, people are just pitying you. They're not seeing you as who you are. They're just seeing you as like this really sorry person. And does anybody really want to be viewed like that? I mean, I really don't think so. I don't, you know, and when I stopped, because I did, when I first got diagnosed, I played that pity card like nobody's business, man. Like I played it out. And then I looked back on it and I was like, now these people didn't really care about you at all. They just felt sorry for you. And I'm like, wow, I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. You know, I mean, you know, as soon as somebody starts to feel sorry for you, it's almost like they've given up hope on you, you know, and I never want that. And so people with a diagnosis like own it, you know, and just, you know, take accountability for your own actions. And if you are having a rough time with medication, go talk to your doctor and get stabilized, but don't play the victim because nobody likes that.
So, what are some, I guess, advice or some things you could talk about that would help people? It could be activities or just systematic things during this time frame who might be dealing with, isolation, as we all are, but especially people who may have mental health issues. It could be, I know meditation is a big thing, but what are some things that you could share?
Well, exercise is huge for me. Get your body moving. You know, and generally, like when I exercise and I do my thing with the dog, I'm outside, so it gets me out of my environment. And believe me, with the COVID thing and being in isolation and you know being in your house 24/7 for weeks on end, I can understand how that could cook people out that didn't normally have that situation in their lives. But you know what? You can still go outside. You don't have to wear a mask. You know, you could just like go in your yard and just, you know, rake, or like in my case, I could go out and shovel today. But it releases your endorphins and it gets your dopamine going, and it reconnects parts of your brain that might be not connecting so well because you are in isolation. Get some sunshine. Vitamin D is huge. And you could just sit on your porch in a chair and get some sunshine. Be mindful of what you eat. Our food nowadays is a lot of chemicals and filler. And you know, try to have fresh fruit and vegetables on a daily basis. It will definitely help you. You know, during isolation time, I've read a lot of books. You know, you can read people's autobiographies or biographies or self-help books or kid books, but just something that expands your mind and gets it out of your everyday environment. Like I said before, reach out to people, connect. Don't be scared to connect with people. I really doubt anybody is not going to pick up the phone at this point in time, you know, especially if they haven't heard from you in a while. I went back to school. Education for me is huge. Always keeping my mind, you know, growing and learning is, it's key for me to stay stable. But I mean, I honest to God, exercise is like the easiest thing that people can do. And especially like, you know, during this time, like you can't, all right, you might not be able to go to the gym and you might not be able to do this, but you know what? You can modify stuff and a quick, brisk 20-minute walk, you know, from the end of your driveway to, you know, the end of your neighborhood to back will help to elevate your mood. So those are a couple of really simple things. And then be mindful of sleep. You know, without sleep, things start getting a little cuckoo. So, but exercise will help you to sleep better. So it kind of all goes hand in hand.
So, talk a little bit. You mentioned earlier about your podcast. Could you tell everyone the name of your podcast and what you do?
Yep. My podcast is called Dancing with Bipolar. And it has basically been the story of my life living with bipolar disorder. And you know, I'm very transparent on my show. So if you have like any kind of issues with obscene language, or you know, I wouldn't suggest that you listen to it with your kids. But I'm extremely transparent, and I tell you exactly what's going on with me. There's been some where I have been extremely manic, and you can tell, and somewhere I've been absolutely depressed. And I just literally did one like a couple days ago where I told you I was starting to fall into that dark mood, and I caught it and I flipped it during the podcast. So if people are curious as to what I mean by that, I can't remember the name of it. It's like the last podcast I did, and I le legitimately flip my mood during my podcast because I'm starting to go down this dark, dark road of all bad, and I flip it. So right there is like a learning for people who want to learn how to change their mindset, like right in mid-speech, that is the perfect podcast to listen to. And I also have some interviews on there with some people that I feel would benefit my listeners in regards to like mental health or just you know, like life coaches and stuff like that, and how to better your life. And actually, Friday is my birthday, and Friday I'm having this gentleman named Switch from Canada. He's a hip hop artist out of Canada. Come on and talk about his addiction problems and his mental health issues, and how he transformed himself through his music and got well. So I'm actually really looking forward to that on Friday. But yeah, so it's called Dancing with Bipolar. I've 83 shows, and I just today when I went and checked my numbers, I just hit 23,000 downloads on it. So I was like, oh my God, it happened. So I was so excited to see that. But yeah, anybody that has mental health or wants to understand people that have a mental health diagnosis, listen to the show because I really try to explain it and put it in layman's terms, so that everybody can understand better, you know, whether you have it yourself and relate to me, or if you love somebody that has a mental health diagnosis and just can't quite wrap your head around it, the show will definitely help to educate you on what it's all
Well,
about.
happy early birthday, and yeah,
Thank you.
congratulations on the 23,000 downloads. That's a great accomplishment in itself as well.
I was shocked because I've been counting it down, and I wanted to hit 25, and then you know everything happened this year, and I took a break from the show. And but I mean, I'm just grateful for everybody that listens to it. And it is, it's huge. And if you're not in the podcast world, it's just numbers to you. But for those of us in the podcast world, it's like, wow, that many people actually listen to what I said. It's pretty amazing, and it's very, very humbling as
Yeah,
well.
it sounds like you have a really good grasp on or good understanding of ha your awareness. It seems like you have some awareness when you were talking about in mid-sentence while you were kind of going off, you realized where you were and you flipped it.
Yep.
How did you gain that awareness?
Oh, wow. I think lots of therapy, truthfully, being honest with yourself, which is sometimes the hardest thing to be, is to be honest with yourself and realize that you might be the dark cloud in the room, you know, that maybe it's not everybody else. Taking into accountability your own faults and weaknesses, and realizing that you have them and that everybody has them. And but just being mindful of where you are. Last year I took a class out of Berkeley called The Science of Happiness, which I suggest everybody take. You can take it off of edX for free, so you don't have to put any money towards it. But it really rewired my brain and how I think about happiness and how I think about you know, everybody thinks that somebody else is going to make you happy, and that is not how it works. It's all in your own head. And when I took that class, there was a whole section on mindfulness, and it opened my mind up big to like how I affect people when I walk into a room, how my attitude can like either make or break something. You know, and I'm not going to say that it happened overnight. You know, it's definitely a learned process. And sometimes I'm pretty deep down that hole before I go, oh shoot, where are we going? You know, go, let's start digging back out of this abyss, because this is not where we want to go. And I had some really good friends at the time when I was taking that class that I was like, can you just like tap me on the shoulder, or if you see me doing this or this, give me a signal so that I can stop. Because a lot of times you're not aware of it because you're in your own head and everything, and you're not aware of what you are, you know, putting out there to other people. But to have an accountability partner who will like give you that look or something, and you're like, oh, I'm doing it now. Okay. You know, and then you can start to track yourself on that. That was super helpful. You know, Christopher actually was like one of my accountability partners. He would catch me before I would. He was he told me that I was an egotist, which I guess I could be sometimes. But like he would say, you know, people don't relate to you because, you know, you think that you're so much better than them. And I was like, no, that's not. I don't think I'm better than them at all. But he would catch me, and I'd be like, oh no, you're right. Maybe I am acting like that. So, you know, to have the accountability on that is good too. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm just extremely mindful now of what I say, how I present myself. I always want to put forth the best face I have, you know. I don't want to go into a room being, you know, Eeyore and all grumpy. I want to go into a room and radiate hope for people, you know, and positivity, you know. And that was like one of Christopher's things, his art that I have. He left me a whole lot of art, thank God. But positivity was like his word, and I have one of his pieces framed now on my wall, and it was his in calligraphy, just the word positivity. And every time I start to feel that negative urge, I look at that and I'm like, okay, positivity, we got it, you know. So, but I mean, you have it's not an overnight success to be mindful of things. It takes time and training, and I'm just grateful I learned it because it saved me a lot of trouble.
So, what valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with? What's your one to grow on?
My one to grow on. Never give up on yourself. Okay, we all have these dark nights of the soul, and we all go through stuff where we honestly don't think that there's another side to it, but there is. Sometimes you got to dig really deep and you got to white knuckle your life, but you cannot give up on yourself, because the minute you give up on yourself, that's when everybody else gives up on you. And then you get that mindset that nobody cares. You know who should matter the most to you? Yourself. How you feel about yourself and how you present yourself to yourself should be the first course of action in your life. Wake up every day, look at yourself in the mirror, smile, say, hey, gorgeous, how are you doing today? It's going to be a good one. and that will set your day off right. And smile at yourself. I know it sounds crazy, but that first smile of the day sets everything in motion. Don't ever give up on yourself. You are worth it and you matter.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.